Okay, so we continue the Rambam, Hilchos Malva Velova, Perek Dalet, Halacha Dalet, Chapter 4, Law 4. We just began discussing the laws of interest, and we said there's a number of different lavim that apply to the lender, the borrower, people who assist with that, all those things. And we say you don't get lashes for this because you could always fix this up. You can always get the money back. So now, and we said also, we concluded, would say if the malva dies and he took money before he died, it doesn't, the children don't have to give it back because it's a knas to the father, not to the kid. So that continues in halacha dalet. If the father left to the children, the lender, he left for the children money that he collected from ribbis, even though they know that the money that's there is ribbisly attained money, they don't have to return it. However, there will be an exception. That's if that's money. But what if the lender returned a cow or a garment that is a ribbis payment? I'm assuming anything that's identifiable, that has a simen on it, and people can know that it was taken by ribbis. So that situation, the children, chayovim lahachsrim et nekvodavim, they have to return it to show honor to their parents, because it looks bad. That's the cow your father took with interest.
That's what
Bessie's
for.
You know, that's the famous interest cow. Okay, so it will always, you know, remember their father not for a blessing. So get rid of it, give it back.
The cow could be like 2%.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Twice. Now, but when do we say this? When do we say that you have to give back the identifiable object that the father left to them? We know that the father did tshuva for his avera of taking the ribbis, and the only thing was he didn't have enough time to speak lahasar shmeis. He was going to return the cow, but he died. So now he did tshuva. And it's not honorable for the father. They should be holding out to something that he got in a sinful fashion. So then they have to give it back. Avalim lo asa tshuva. The father did not do tshuva. He was unrepentant of taking the cow. Ein choishishi lichvoda. The children need not be concerned for their father's honor, because a child is not obliged to honor a father who is a rasha. And we'll see soon in a few halachas. Yes, after that, that's the next thing I was going to say. But we see that's a terrible avera. If a person sins by taking interest, that would label him as a Russian. If he didn't do tshuva, he died a Russia, and children are not obliged to honor parents who died as Rishayim. However, the commentaries say that's only if he's dead and he didn't do tshuva. What if the father's alive and he didn't do tshuva yet, and the father's still a Russia? The child is obliged to honor him. Why?
He might still do tshuva.
And if he might still do tshuva, and he does do tshuva, then retroactively, the child dishonored his father who was not ending up being a Russia. Therefore, they would have to be concerned. But if the father died without even doing tshuva, they can keep the item. We don't have to worry about the negative comments about the father. Even an identifiable object, they don't have to return. Yeah?
We talked about the steps of tshuva. Wouldn't returning the item be one of the first steps?
Well, he didn't. No, it doesn't have to be the first. First of all, the person has to have charata. So the guy just never thought there's anything wrong with it. But he had charata. He says, I really feel bad about it. I've confessed to Hashem. And you know what? Tomorrow I'm going to return it. And tomorrow never came for him. So that's when we have to give that back. Now here's a very interesting halacha in halacha hey. Hagazlonim v'hamalva beribis. Person, I have to add a very important clause here. People who regularly steal, not a one-time deal, regularly steal and regularly lend money and interest. Okay? Now, let's say, shehechziru. Now they want to give back the money for the people they either stole from or they lend from interest. They voluntarily want to give it back. Now, normally, if a guy who lends money with interest, who want to voluntarily, we don't wait for him to voluntarily, we take it from him, right? Normally, right? He's alive, right? But here, the guy volunteers to give it back. Ganef volunteers to give it back. Halacha is ein mekavim, and we don't take it back from them. Now, I added a clause. What was the clause I said? They regularly do it. It's very important. And we rather, instead of taking the money, we'll be moichel them, either the ganav or the person who lent money on interest. Why? K'dei liftoach lahem derech l'tshuva. In order to open up a path for them to tshuva, to make it easier for them to do tshuva. The Gemara gives a story in the Gemara. There was one fellow who was a common thief, and he stole a lot of things, and he took the money, spent the money, wasted the money. And he turns to his wife one day, says, "I want to do tshuva for my lifelong of thieving ways." The wife said, you silly fellow. If you're going to do tshuva, you won't even have a belt left to your name. In other words, you've stolen so much, how are you going to return all that money? So therefore, the story ended up, he didn't do tshuva at the end. Because I might as well give up hope. Because it's not so. So that's why we say, if a person has regularly stolen from people, now, and if he wants to give back, we don't take it from him. Because there's no way he's going to be able to pay back everybody, and then he's going to give up on doing tshuva. Therefore, we say, be mochel him, and then he can do tshuva. But that's only people who've got exorbitant bills from all the people they stole from or they lent with interest. If it's a one-shot deal, the old halacha goes back. We take it away from him. It goes even further now. We want to keep the door open of tshuva so much so. V'cholam akavim, anyone who takes money back from these professional thieves or money lenders, ein ruach chachamim noicham, the rabbis are not pleased with what he does. It's not even like going beyond the letter of the law. It's not a good thing. The rabbi's saying by taking that, you're closing the door for tshuva for these guys, because now they're going to think they got to pay back everybody, and they're not going to be able to pay back everybody. Okay, I guess if the guy was unusually wealthy and he'd be able to do what?
Well,
yeah, but it's a bit of evidence.
Don't
go back. Vote early, vote often.
Go back up 100 million.
Right, right. Okay, now, so this was what, now, v'im hoisag, now, here is an exception to the rule again. V'im hoisag gezela kayemes, if the thing that he stole is still around. Now that's much different than a professional ganef who spent all the stuff he has, so there's no way he can hack his furniture to be able to pay back. But if the stuff he stole is still around, right, so it's not a big deal, just give it back. It's not going to put him in debt to give it back. Or, v'haribis dover mesuyim, or there's something specific about the ribis, as we said before, it's identifiable item, and that will cause embarrassment to the fellow. And the thing is still intact. In other words, the item of the ribis is the way it is. So it's there instead of being spent or whatever. Then we would receive it for them, because then it's not an issue of you're closing the doors for tshuva for them. It's interesting how the Rambam, if you look carefully at his wording, he says that the gezela is kayemes, but the item of the ribis is mesuyim. It's interesting. It's interesting why he says by the ribis it has to be identifiable. What if the ribis is just around? Why wouldn't he have to give it back either? It's not clear. From the wording of the Rambam, it's a little bit schwer. From the commentaries say that the reason is gzela, a ganef never is koine it. Doesn't matter if it's around or not. But ribis, he is koine. Still, it's a little difficult to understand why you wouldn't take ribis if the money is there. He's only saying if it's a cow or something, then he gives it back because the embarrassment. The money's there, suggests that he shouldn't. He don't. Yeah, but if he has it, then he's got it. So let him give it back.
Yeah.
So that I don't understand. But that's what Rambam says. I don't know. Okay. Okay. Vav. Shtar shekosuv oribis. Now we have a document, and in the document it writes that so-and-so lent to so-and-so so much money with so-and-so amount of ribis. B Bein Kitzutza, regardless if it's a Ribbis Kitzutza, which mentioned yesterday, where the amount of Ribbis is mentioned up front in the beginning, 4% interest on that. Bein Sheldi Vreim, if it's a rabbinic type of Ribbis, which usually comes later, which is going to be explained in chapter 6.
So don't ask.
Right. Go. So now here's the question. The question is, you wrote a document that really is an unlawful document. You say, I'm lending you $100, and you're going to pay me back $110 at the end of the time. It's an unlawful document. The question is, what do you do when it's time to pay off the loan? So now there's a lot of things we could think about over here. Now, one thing's for sure. Does the guy got to pay him back $110?
No.
That's for sure not. Well, maybe he shouldn't pay him back anything.
Because it was illegal.
It was an illegal loan, and maybe we should fine him. That would teach him a lesson not to do that again. So the Rambam says, even though he wrote a document that was an illegal document, still, it has enough power. Gove es hakeren, the malve can collect the principal, vein gove es haribis, but he can't collect the interest, and that's the chiddush of the Rambam, that we do not penalize him on the principal, even though he wrote such a document. Now, what if kodam vegove hakol? What if the lender quickly asserted himself and collected the entire debt, including the interest? Then, motzin mimenu haribas kitzutza. The ribas kitzutza, as we'll learn, we already said, bezin can take that away from him. Kitzutza can be taken away. Aval avak ribas, but the dust of ribas, meaning to say the rabbinic ribas, it's not an actual ribas, it's like the dust of ribas. Shumi divrayim eina goive. The bezin does not collect min halova la malva, from the lova to the malva. Vein machsir no so min malva, and even if you collected it, you don't return it from the malva to the lova. He doesn't give it back. Doesn't matter before or afterwards. It's not the bezin's business over there. Okay, now, Zion. Now you see how terrible this aver is. Kalakose shtar ribis. Anyone who writes a ribis document, and he's the one who's going to be collecting or borrowing from, it doesn't really matter. Hareza kekosev umedolov edim shekofer b'Hashem l'kei Yisrael. It's as if he wrote, and it's as if there were witnesses, even though there were no witnesses on the document, witnesses that testified that he denies in the God of Israel. Okay? V'chein kalalove umalve b'ribis b'no me'asam. And similarly, any borrower and lender who do an interest transaction with the two of them, Hareihem kekofrim b'Hashem. They're considered like deniers of Hashem, Elokei Yisrael, and also the kofr b'Yitzis Yisrael, and they're considered as if they have denied the God of Israel, and which means they deny the hashkocha of Hashem that came out through the wonders that happened of Egypt. Okay? So that's just like taking the Jews out of Israel. Shows that God had divine intervention for the Jewish people. Similarly, a person who borrows or lends money on interest, as if he denies the supervision of Hashem, as if to say, Hashem cannot provide you a parnasa in a kosher way. Now, there is a textual proof to this. Shenemar, as it says, when it talks about the prohibition of taking ribis, it says, Eskas b'cholo sitein lo b'nesha, you should not give your money to him in a bite, etc., etc. And then ends all these halachas by saying, of ribis by saying, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, Asher Otzeisi Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim. I am the Lord who took you out of Egypt. So what are we mentioning? The Lord took you out of Egypt. To say, that's why I took you out of Egypt. That you should accept the mitzvah of ribis. Because anybody who admits that there are laws of ribis and keeps them and doesn't violate them, it's if he admits that Hashem took the Jews out of Egypt. Anyone who denies is if he denied it. Again, it's that idea, that the main idea of this, the Musar idea is, you know, the reason why it's bad to charge ribbis, there's many reasons, but one is it's like you've got the guaranteed profit. It's like you're going into a profession where there's no risks, so to speak. Okay, oh, there's always a risk the guy won't pay you back. But it's less likely, because I'm sure the guy's got collaterals on that. So usually you go to business, you put your trust in Hashem. Hashem takes care. Hashem runs the world. I make my efforts. And I worry, the Hashkach Hashem will decide what I get. But here, when you're taking interest, let's say you're trying to guarantee your profit. And that's kind of saying, well, God has no affairs with what I'm doing. That's one of the interpretations.
But if you did with a non-Jew, guaranteeing your
So that's so. Why is that? So I believe the Kli Yoker says, you're not going to like the non-politically correct statement.
Pay.
No, opposite.
Non-Jews don't pay. That's
non-Jews don't pay, and there would be nothing you could do about it. You know, when you lend to a non-Jew, there's a great risk he ain't going to pay you back. With a Jew, most Jews, you lend on a collateral, you're going to take the collateral. The Kli Yoker was writing in the medieval times. You go to the non-Jew and say, I want the collateral. The guy says, you know what? I'll shoot you. Get out of here. In other words, you couldn't, with non-Jews, there was nothing. You could never be sure of anything. So I heard this from the non-Jews. One, they just turn around, make a pogrom and kill you all. Right? So there's nothing guaranteed when you're dealing in the world of non-Jews. In the world of Jews, still, a Jew is, could be bad Jews, but most Jews, if they took a loan and there's a collateral, they'll at least let you collect the collateral. And they're not going to kill you for that. I believe that's a Kli Yoker who discusses that, if my memory serves me correct, from many moons ago. So that's in terms of that. Okay? Okay. Ches. Now, there's other reasons, obviously. Another philosophical reason why we don't take interest, and this could maybe have to do with this, because, you know, Jews have to realize that they are brothers to each other. And you don't take interest from a brother. While non-Jews are not brothers. So the non-Jews say, how come you lend him without interest and us with interest? He says, we treat you the way you treat goyim. We treat you the way you treat your fellow non-Jews, as business is business, right? But Jews, we treat like brothers. So we're not going to charge interest from them. So that's also part of what the Yetzias Mitzrayim was all about, that the Jews would go out as brothers. So that could be another answer, perhaps. Okay, now, Ches. Now, here's an interesting, what if a father wants it? Now, there's two ways of understanding this next halacha. They're both acceptable, and they're doing the two opposite ways. What if a father wants to teach his sons to be a little bit familiar with the ways of the world, and they should know there's a concept called ribbis? So he teaches them by example, and we'll see in a minute. And he's going to teach them how tasty it is to be the recipient of interest. So the father's going to borrow money from the kid and pay him back with interest. So he's going to teach him the ways of the world. Now we're going to see in which way he's teaching him. There's two opposite explanations. They can both be true. They're not mutually exclusive of each other. Can you do this as an educational process more so than anything else? We'll explain it inside now. Ches. Oser lahodam lahalvas banav b'nei beis ribis. A man cannot borrow from his sons or family members with interest for the purpose of educating them. Even though the father doesn't care, he doesn't feel oppressed by this loan. Remember, mostly, if a guy has to borrow with interest, he doesn't want to borrow from interest. He has no choice. And it's an oppressive situation. Here the father's happy to do it. As a matter of fact, he's really gifting them the extra money. This isn't a classic interest case. Now the question is, what is he trying to show them? Either he's trying to show them how tasty it is to receive, because once, you know, kid's got his bar mitzvah money, let's say. So the father says, can you lend me $100? At the end of the year, I'll pay you back $110. Right? So then the kid will already have a little bit of a taste that, this gishmak, you know, to get interest, and now you learn to collect from goyim with interest. You know, so get a gishmak. The kid feels good. Look, I didn't do anything. My money worked for me. It's a great thing. So father wants him to have a taste of the pleasure of interest. Or someone the opposite. The father makes the deal, and then he does it. But then in the last minute, when it's time to pay, he says, and you know, you're expecting this $10 bill? Yeah? Hashem says, you can't have it. So I want to teach you, you can't have it. But he started off the loan by in a way that it should be as a gift to them. Either way, it's an educational process. Maybe even he gave it to them, but then takes it back from them. But so it's not like he personally felt oppressed by the kid, but he wants to teach them some kind of a lesson, and it really was a gift to them. Hareza also, you can't do it under any of those circumstances. Why? Shema yargilein bedavarzeh, because then maybe once they've tasted how good it is, they will get accustomed to taking ribbis in terms of places where it's not permitted to do it. It's not good to give him such a great pleasure for that. But we do see that's the only reason why you can't do it. But technically you could do it. From the pure halachic perspective, it would be allowed to give the child ribbis because you're not really giving him ribbis. You're happy to give it to him and you're really gifting it to him. So only because of this side reason do we prohibit it. Therefore, that leads into halacha tes. So therefore, what if the side reason would not apply? Then you could indeed pay back with ribis. And therefore, talmidei chacham shehilvu zezeh, if Torah scholars who know all the halachas and know what you're allowed to do, what you're not allowed to do, v'nasan lo yesra al mashal v'anu, and then the scholar gives back more than what the guy gave him. Now that would seem to be ribis she'ena ketusa.
Right.
That's rabbinic ribis. Harei zeh mutar. That's allowed. Why? Shadav yadu, amongst the scholarly crowd, is well known. He only gave him a gift. Because you know you can't give the guy ribis. But the guy's just giving him a gift. Because they, since they're scholars, they know the severity of the prohibition of ribis. But this is only by rabbinic ribis this is allowed. But by biblical ribis ketsusa would not be allowed to be done. But clearly the commentators say, what if the person's not a scholar and he doesn't know the severity of ribis? Then, if you can't give such a fellow, because then he might think, oh, Rabbi so-and-so gave me extra money. I guess people are allowed to take ribis. Because he's not a scholar, he doesn't understand what's going on. He thinks it's an actual ribis.
Didn't we have an argument with Shemitah that you can't give a gift because it's not really a gift?
No, as a matter of fact, there we said it could be done with scholars. We said it could be done with scholars because they know it's a gift. I believe we said that's when we referenced that. He didn't say that.
No, but if you
just gave extra.
You're saying very specifically it's not interest. You're saying it's a gift. Whether you're a scholar or not, you say, I know.
Yeah, but he didn't. He didn't. That, but the Rambam is doing where he didn't. He just gave him extra money back. Finished. Now we have to assume, what did he mean? Normally, if me and you, you know, you give me 10 and I give you back 12, you don't say anything. I've transgressed. I clearly gave you interest. But with great scholars who are so clear that you can't give interest, there's no way you want to give interest. Even without saying anything, we know he means to give them.
If you say to me, I can't give you interest, but I want to buy you a coffee at Starbucks.
If he wants to gift it to him.
I want to give you a cup of coffee. Thank you for being there.
But
it looks like he's benefiting from the loan.
No, but you're going to benefit either way. So just
how are you going to benefit either way?
We're saying a Torah scholar knows he can't give interest, so it's clearly not interest. And I'm saying, not a Torah scholar, but you know you can't give interest. You explicitly say this is not interest. I appreciate what you did for me. Here's a gift certificate at Starbucks.
That's benefit. I don't think either of them should
work. Benefited from the loan, it's not allowed.
No, we won't.
But that's the Torah scholar benefits.
We'll see. We'll get more into the Avak Ribis. This is all going to element of Avak Ribis.
You can't ask.
And non-scholars will still think it was Ribis. That's the thing. That's the problem. However, you should see the Gos Maimon differs on the Rambam, and he says even a Talmud Chochem shouldn't be doing it because the masses will see what they're doing, and then they're going to think everybody can do it.
Yeah.
So that really isn't a good thing to do on any square of, at all.
Not everybody agrees.
Okay, now halacha yud is a very interesting scenario now, where when you pay the guy back, you give him extra. Now the question is, there's another way that extra can be given, and how could that be? It's called a mistake in counting. So when will we assume that there's a mistake in counting? Versus where we understand that the guy for sure was giving more. Okay, that becomes the next issue in Halacha Yud. Hamal v'eschaver, a person lends money to his friend. Umotza halova yoser. Now there's two ways to look at it. In the lending, let's say I got to borrow $100 from you. And look, the guy gives me 150. Now what do we assume? There was a mistake and I should give it back? Or do we assume he wanted to give me more? 100 is a loan and 50 is a gift. Okay? That's one way where you're borrowing, you made up an amount, the guy gave you more than you agreed to on the bar. Why did the guy give? Well, we're going to have to see in a minute. There's a way to determine if it's a mistake, and there's a way to determine if it was a gift.
It's a mistake.
Sometimes you want to gift the fellow without making a big deal about it. Okay, so we'll see. And then the reverse. Now that paying back, and the guy pays back more. The guy's paying his debt. And the lender finds he has more. So what's going on? It depends on the file. Now, obviously, you know, and let's say, yeah, it'd be a nice thing to ask the person, was that a gift or was it not a gift? But the problem is, as soon as he gave it, you got run over by a car or whatever. or he went out of town or whatever, or you're too embarrassed or whatever. I mean, obviously asking would be an easy way to determine, but for whatever reason, we're not able to ask and say. Well, but so we don't know. Did he make a mistake, and then you should give it back to him because it's like a lost object, or did he intend to give it to you? That's the thing we have to determine. Was it a mistake, and then a mistake means you have to give back, or was it amount that we don't know? He really wanted to gift you something, so it depends. If it's within the reasonable boundaries of assuming it was a common error, and the guy wouldn't want to make such an error. Then chayev lahachzir, you have to give it back on both ends because we assume it's an error. We'll see in a minute how you can determine that. But vimlav, but if it's an exorbitantly amount extra, where there's no way the guy made a mistake, he intentionally meant to do that, then it's matana hu shenasana, it's a gift he is giving you. Now, certainly when the lender gives you more, that's not a problem there. But even on the return side, even though we say that only for a Talmud Chacham it's allowed, but this is where you didn't tell him anything, we will allow it even if he's not a Talmud Chacham. That's what the commentators explain. When you give it to him and the guy knows he's getting more, and everybody knows that more is given back, only by a Talmud Chacham does the Rambam say that. Here it was discreet, because he didn't really say, here, I'm giving you $50 more. He just found out it's $50 more. So since it's not done out loud, so to speak, it seems Rambam will be lenient and say that gifted is permitted, even though he only allowed it by scholars before, he'll be more lenient. Or maybe that's another scenario. Yeah. Or it could be Ogzela. Maybe when the guy paid back the 100, you know what, a couple of years ago, that's the story I told you guys a week ago. Remember I told you I found the envelope with the money in my my thing? Yeah. Yeah, you heard that story.
But you found the envelope?
No, it was in my mailbox. The guy writes a small note. Here's $35. I damaged something of you years ago. He didn't even say what his name was. I don't know who gave it to me. And I hope this will cover the amount that got damaged. So let's say Reuven stole something from Shimon 3 years ago for $50. And now Reuven has to borrow from Shimon $100. And now he says, now's a good time to make, I'm too embarrassed to pay him back. I just slip him back $150. And that way, I didn't have to say anything. And he'll realize. I'm sure he didn't forget from 3 years ago. I'm just too embarrassed to tell him. So that, in other words, so that's possible. And it's an exorbitantly extra. If it's not a gift, it could be he's returning a stolen object. He's just throwing it into the mix. Or maybe there's a third party who stole. Levi says to Shimon, I know you're paying back Reuven 100, you know.
Here's 50.
I'm too embarrassed. Just put this 50 in because I owe him from something I don't want to talk to him about. It. Just throw it in and this way I will have paid him back and it's quiet. So a third party told him to throw it into the mix so you can receive it. So that becomes the rule. If it appears to be a legitimate error, then return on both ends. But if it seems it's way too exorbitant, if those kinds of things aren't errors, then we assume it's either a gift or returning something that's stolen on either direction, and we say you can keep it. Now the question is, how do I know if it's an error or if it's a gift? So let's just finish this last part. But kama hadasto, so when will we have it will be an error? So it could be, let's say you're giving out things in numerical values of one. Let's say the guy is giving you seven single dollar bills.
Let's say $20 bills.
No, let's make it seven. Okay. Seven single bills, and you get an eighth. Get an eighth. So now it's a mistake in ones. We have a mistake of one in ones. So that's pretty obvious. It's a mistake because you meant to give seven ones, gave him eight ones. Obishtime, let's say mistakes in twos. When he's paying off two by two by two by two, and he gave him an extra two. Obechamisha, let's say he's paying back in fives. And instead of giving him back nine fives, he gave him 10 fives. Obasoro, he paid him back in tens. So instead of ten, he gave him tens. Because then, Shema, Mona, Chamisha, Chamisha, so because maybe he's paying back five and fives and tens. But if the mistake would be a different number, so one, two, five, and ten works, three already is not, there isn't the common of paying back threes. Right. So three means that he gave him many more than just one extra. He gave him three extra. Right. That would already be considered exorbitant. Four would be four extra. I guess seven and eight would also, in other words, numbers along that way where it doesn't appear to be a mistake. And the truth of the matter is, And it's a little complicated here, but v'cheni motza yeser minya chamishes or minya asiris echad echad. If you have one more than by fives and tens, meaning if let's say you're off by 6 or 11, okay, where you are off by a 5 or a 10 plus a 1, we also consider that a mistake. Because in those days, it seems that when they paid them back with tens, let's say piles of tens, they would put all the piles of tens, and they count them by then taking their own ones and see how many ones they have to count, how many tens they have. And what if by mistake he puts one of his ones on top of the piles of tens, so he could be taking one extra but 10 less. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's how you can get a differential of 6 or 11. But that would all mean, these are all reasonable possibilities of a mistake. And therefore, chayv lachzul shem acharim, because it could be the ones that he counted, shayimonim v'chamisho esis, with the fives and tens. Maybe he mixed his one of the counting ones in the tens and the fives.
So
he ends up giving him 10 less minus a 1. So it could be 11, or et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, yeah.
So in other words, the basic rule, if it could be assumed to be an honest mistake, you pay it back. If it seems to an exorbitant amount, there's no way he would have made such a mistake.
A gift.
We assume he gifted or returned a stolen object.